Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but
don't you know we're gonna have a...
Hey there, this is Harvey Wasserman back for another wonderful hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We have a good full hour with you. The first 15 minutes when he calls in, as he has now, we're going to talk to you with the Reverend Billy. I do want to say very briefly before we jump in with the Reverend, he's going to talk to us about Thanksgiving and a very interesting action that he's going to do in St. Louis at the headquarters of a major chemical corporation, and I will let him talk to you about it. He's on the phone with us, as is Richard Sharman, at the 15 minutes after the hour, after the Reverend Billy tells us what he's up to, we're going to join in with Richard and with my co-conspirator, Bob Fitrakis, to talk about the theft of the 2014 and all future elections. But first, Billy, why don't you jump in and tell us what you're about, because you got some limited time here, and your stuff is really, really interesting.
Hi, Harvey. I'm talking to you from a bus.
And we're good. Go for it.
We're going due west on the highway. We're just coming into Pennsylvania, coming from New York, traveling to St. Louis.
Now, what are you going to do in St. Louis?
Well, I'm here with the Stop Shopping Choir. There are about 35 of us.
Stop Shopping Choir?
Stop Shopping Choir.
And there are 35 of you on a bus from New York to St. Louis?
That's right.
All right, so what are you going there for?
Well, we have a dual purpose. We have Monsanto on our minds, this great poisoner of the earth, this creator of climate change, this destroyer of small farmers and communities, this pesticide spreader, killing the honeybees, killing songbirds, killing everything that's wild, killing everything but their GMO factory farm crops.
And what are you going to do at Monsanto? Are you going to their headquarters in St. Louis?
The world headquarters is in St. Louis. And we're going to have a Thanksgiving dinner, an organic Thanksgiving dinner there, in their face.
On the steps of the Monsanto building in St. Louis on Thanksgiving?
The world headquarters is a big campus of buildings in a suburb of St. Louis called Creve Coeur, which I think means something along the lines of broken hearts.
Yeah, probably.
French coming to us from the Louisiana Purchase days. So we have local food safety activists and people coming in from Chicago, coming in to join us. And this is partially sponsored by the Organic Consumers Association, which has sent out invitations to 800,000 people to pledge to eat organically this Thanksgiving with us. And we invite your vast listening public to do the same thing, Brother Harvey.
Okay, so this is Reverend Billy, the Stop Shopping Choir. Are you on a Greyhound or are you on your own chartered bus?
We've got our own bus. We raise money on social forums to pay for this. A lot of people are interested in the outcome of our organic Thanksgiving dinner.
Now, are you going to do this outside? Are you going to set up a picnic table? Exactly how are you going to eat Thanksgiving dinner on the Monsanto campus?
We're going to prepare our Thanksgiving dinner and on the stoves of a local homeless shelter in their kitchen, and then we're going to go to Monsanto and have our dinner there. and have a
good
time.
Well, what do you mean by there? On the steps of the building? Do you have a location set up?
Well, it's such a vast place. We've been there once. We visited Ferguson a couple months ago with the folks protesting the treatment of young black males and unarmed black males, especially thinking of Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Vondrett Myers, and all the rest of the long list of victims of racist police. So we joined them a couple months ago, and we raised some money with our friend Joan Baez in two different New York concerts this last week. And so we hope to contribute to the legal fund at Ferguson this weekend. So that's the, when I say dual purpose, we're talking about the invisible toxins of Monsanto. We're also talking about the bullets of racist police.
Tell us a bit more about, I know last night it was announced that the killer of Michael Brown would not be indicted. I mean, this is truly astounding. Usually trials are supposed to be held in public. In this case, we had a prosecutor who clearly did not want to get an indictment, who persuaded a grand jury to not indict someone that he's supposed to be indicting. So that was a travesty. But now, exactly at Monsanto, have you invited anybody from Monsanto to join you for this Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, we've been public about it. There's been quite a bit of press about it. We're not hiding what we're doing. We're not sneaking up on them. We need to out this company. They're all over the world. They're a major neoliberal land-grabbing company. They'll bribe local officials in some African country to confront indigenous people who have been living on the bend of a river for 1,000 years, and they'll give them the pink slip and take them in trucks with the paramilitary to concrete housing in some city where they die. And then they take over their rich land and their virgin forest and turn it into a cash crop. This is going on right now wholesale across the world, supported by the Obama administration, surprisingly enough. And this company must be confronted. We have a special relationship in our choir to the honeybee. We've been protesting at the RoboBee Laboratory in Harvard, where they're trying to design a drone that will replace the honeybee. And it's difficult to imagine that being possible. We don't think it is possible, but just the fact that they're trying to do it, and they have a lot of money to do it, to go forward with this experiment, it talks to us about the power of this company, Monsanto.
Well, we know Monsanto is huge, and they're deep into the GMO business and the use of glyphosate. Did I pronounce that right?
The
phosphates that are killing all the plants.
Yes, the neonicotinoids. I can't pronounce some of the poisons, but they coat the seeds of plants with these pesticides that are now so powerful because it's like an arms race. The pests, of course, the weeds and the insects, they evolve to compete with these industrial poisons. And they come back in a few generations and they're stronger. And then, of course, Monsanto makes Roundup Ready Plus. You know, they make they double their deviltry. And
These crops, these Roundup Ready crops are designed totally to suit the needs of a single product, which is a Roundup, a pesticide. Is that right?
Yes. The pesticides come in at the same time as the GMOs, so they build up plants that can resist everything. They're just made of chrome. These plants are just, you know, they have genes from salmon, so they resist frost. They have this gene, that gene, that gene, that gene. They're the Frankenfood, we call it, Frankenfood. And they can resist these pesticides. And then the pesticides, the new generation of pesticides comes in, and it's really virulently poisonous. Well, the people in the nearby town are getting sick. The water table's poisoned. The factory farms, of course, are so fossil-centric that they're creating climate change. Organic farming, of course, you recycle. That's why we want to be working with the Organic Consumers Association, because they encourage farmers to recycle into the earth the carbon dioxide. It's a natural part of life.
Right.
But with factory farms, it just goes into the air. The dirt is just an excuse to concoct a brew that will make this cash crop grow. And all the wilderness on the edges, all the possible songbirds, plants, and insects, the biosphere, the local ecosystem, die because they're not keeping pace with the pesticides. And I think that this is gradually coming through to the American people and the people of the world, that these chemical companies are runaway, they're rogue companies. Nobody's regulating them. Michael Taylor, former executive vice president of Monsanto, is Barack Obama's top food safety advisor. He's inside the White House. So they, when somebody like Oregon or Vermont tries to vote for truth and labeling so that we know when there's GMO products on the shelves, 90% of the United States citizenry supports truth and labeling. Well, when an election comes up, when a referendum comes up, the amount of money that Monsanto is able to focus on that election is just outrageous. So this is the corrupting of our government, a corrupting of our democratic institutions, a corrupting of the biosphere. This wave of extinction, these loss of hundreds of species every week, has everything to do with Monsanto. And they're, you know, the seven sisters of chemicals, Syngenta, Bayer, Dow, DuPont, BASF from Germany, Cargill, I mean, these big factory farms. This needs to be undermined. It needs to be opposed. We believe that someday that human rights and earth rights will be the same thing. There will be a word for all of it. Maybe it's love. But we believe
how about
that
how about
needs
solartopia?
To be a way to
let's call it
solartopia. What's that, Harvey?
Let's call it solartopia.
Amen. That's a good
okay, so Reverend
that?
Billy, you and we wish you and your Stop Shopping brigade there on the bus all the greatest. Where can people reach you, and where should we? What website do you have, and what should we look for in terms of your Thanksgiving dinner there at the Monsanto?
Well, you're welcome to check in with us at our Cyber Chapel, which is revbilly.com.
Spell that.
And we'll keep... Rev Billy, R-E-Z Victor, B-Boy, I-L-L-Y, Rev Billy. And we'll be posting text and imagery and videotaping, and we'll see what happens. Amen.
And tell us, give us a minute here. Tell us what your vision is. You're on this pilgrimage to, it's a reverse pilgrimage, I guess. Pilgrimages are when you go somewhere you want to go. You're going to an awful place, the campus of Monsanto. Tell us what the vision is that you're carrying with you in a minute.
We have to live with the earth. We have to live with each other. It all comes down to peace. We're consumerized right now, and that's why it's been so hard for us to get a social movement going in the last decades. We have got to look each other in the eye and not let the products interrupt us. Corporations don't have to mediate between us. We can be with each other directly. When an island of freedom like Ferguson opens up before us, it's because people got into public space together without companies, without the rich. They trust each other to be in the parks and streets together. Let's do that. Amen. Ursaluia.
All right, Reverend Billy, thank you so much. Have a
thank you,
much appreciated. Have a great Thanksgiving. Keep us posted, and we'll have you back on the show to tell us how it went. If you run into a guy named Squanto, by the way, ask him how his tribe is doing.
I'll look for Squanto. Thank you, Brother
All right,
Harvey.
Man. You take care. Have a great Thanksgiving. All right, that was Reverend Billy on with the Stop Shopping Brigade on their way to the Monsanto headquarters in St. Louis on a bus somewhere in Pennsylvania. That was a first for the Soratopia Show. I think that's the first guest we've had talking to us from a bus, certainly with 35 people. This is the Soratopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We've got the great Richard Charnin to talk to us now about the stolen elections. Richard is the third and very major expert on election theft to join us. We had Greg Palast right after the election, and followed by John Simon. And Richard, it's an honor to have you on the show.
Same here. It's always a pleasure, Harvey. And,
okay, Richard.
Same with Bob from Vegas.
Yes. We're waiting for Bob. I don't know if he's called in yet, but they will tell us from the studio in New York when we hear from Bob. But we have heard from Reverend Billy to get us going. So, Richard Charnin, you have a book out. You are very, very prolific on the issue of election theft. As I say, we've had Greg Palast and John Simon. Will you please give us your overview of what happened in the election of 2014 and in terms of election theft, disenfranchisement, and all the other things we've come to know and love about how the Republican Party deals with the electoral process. So give us your overview, and then we'll spend the rest of the show getting into the detail.
Okay. first off, let me say I decided a while back not to do any work in forecasting 2014. So I totally kept out of the pre-election analysis that I have been doing since 2000. So what I've done is I focused, just to bring you up to date, I have been focusing on the JFK assassination, and I wrote a book which just came out a month ago. It's a bestseller. It's called Reclaiming Science, the JFK Conspiracy. Now, the other book, which I published two years ago, is Matrix of Deceit, which is forcing pre-election and election polls and exit polls to match fraudulent vote counts. This is the book, Matrix of Deceit, that really covers the essentials of polling and how polls are manipulated at the end to match the recorded vote. Now, having said that, I came into 2014, I decided, hey, look, I've proved election fraud along with other people. It's systemic. It's ongoing. What the heck is the point of developing to go through the whole process again to forecast the midterm elections or even the 2016 presidential? Bottom line, the system is totally broken, totally corrupt. This has been proven many years ago. I've been singing the same song as well as Bob Simon and Fit Rakus since 2004. I decided, what the hell is the point? What the hell is the point? I'm going to forecast and come up with two numbers. One is going to be the recorded vote, which will be bogus, but I'll be right on the money. And by the way, I calculated in 2008 and 2012 in my forecast of presidential elections. People don't know this. They heard about Nate Silver, who they claim got it right, but really didn't get the the electoral votes right. I had the electoral vote perfectly forecast in 2008, 365 for Obama. I had the electoral vote perfectly forecast in 2012, 332 for Obama. I think I proved my point. Now, those pre-election polls were for the recorded vote. They differ substantially from the true vote. And I don't know if you heard of my true vote model, which I've developed through the years, which I use for presidential and congressional elections. And basically, it's been confirmed and has been confirmed by the unadjusted state and national exit polls. I am the only one that who has actually downloaded all the unadjusted state presidential election polls since 1988. I got them off the Roper site, and I believe that's one of the, and I did a completely thorough analysis, and I believe that might be one of the reasons why the national election pool decided not to do exit polling in 19 states in 2012. I proved beyond any doubt with the looking at exit polls exceeding the margin of error, all red shifting to the Republicans. Let me throw out the numbers. 274 exit polls since 1988. 135 exceeded the margin of error. 131 moved in the direction of the Republican. We would have expected normally at the 95% confidence level that 14 exit polls out of 274 would exceed the margin of error. 135 did. Now, Bob Rakes wrote a column about what just this topic after I came out with my original analysis. Having proved beyond that the elections are fraudulent, why anybody would go in at this point and try to forecast a bogus recorded vote? Well, I'm not paid. I don't work for the New York Times or CNN. I'm not Nate Silver, who's paid to forecast a bogus vote. The work I did was looking for the true vote. And it's just a corollary that in the process, I did two types of analysis. One was based on pre-election polls, which allowed me to calculate the electoral vote, project it, and get it precisely correct. I know that's hard to believe. Nobody knows about it. I don't really get any publicity. Not that I'm looking for it. I wouldn't mind having it. But I got it right on the money twice. Now, in any case,
well, Bob Fitrakis, who's with us, is an expert on polling as well. Has had a lot to say, and he's familiar with your work, Richard. Bob, tell us how Richard's work on the polling fits in to the general pattern of how we know and don't know what the real voice of the people is in an election process.
Well, the problem with the mainstream pollers. And I think Richard is the most accurate of the pollers because I think he's the most sophisticated mathematically from his work in on Wall Street. The first assumption of the pollers, they have very bizarre projections based on what's happening. But one of the things that they really tend to do is assume that the recorded numbers are correct, and hence they adjust after the fact, and then they have to do all sorts of strange things to explain. Like in 2004 in Ohio, they claim that women were kind of hiding in bathrooms and sneaking out of side doors in Republican areas only in the late afternoon, hence screwing up the exit polls. Which the way the exit polls are actually structured, you just move on to the next randomized number or person, and they're not messed up. So they come up with these massively convoluted explanations instead of doing what a trained social scientist would do. A trained social scientist looks again, we were always taught his mister, right? You look to history. Did some intervention happen, right? Was it a tornado that threw the vote off? Some historical. But the next one is you look at your instrumentation. You actually ask whether or not the recording devices, whether it's in, field geology or in physics or in polling, whether the voting machines in this case are actually recording the vote correctly, or could they be recording it wrong? Could they be recalibrated wrong? And they never go to step two. They never go in the his, Mr. analysis. You know, they never go to the question of whether or not the instrumentation is actually recording right. And the instrumentation is owned by partisan for-profit companies. So you totally ignore that. You pretend like Diebold, one of the most partisan companies imaginable, isn't really partisan. You pretend like the Rapp family, this hardcore right-to-life Republican family who brought us the butterfly ballot in Florida, you pretend like they're not really a right-wing hardcore family. And that's how they get to their number. Richard uses extensive census data. He uses, you know, extensive probability and very sophisticated mathematical formulas. That's why he's so accurate.
Well, we're talking here with Bob Fetrakis of the Columbus Free Press, my co-conspirator on five books on election protection, and Richard Charnin, author of Masters of Matrix of Deceit, and one of the leading experts on polling in the United States. And the topic at hand is the discrepancy between exit and other polling versus the outcome of our elections. Now, in the correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but in the lead up to the 2014 election, which led to the capture of the United States Senate by the Republican Party, along with God knows how many other state legislatures, the polls seemed to show that the Republicans had 5% less expected votes in their column than they actually got in the official turnout. Now, are you guys saying, as political scientists and pollsters and Wall Street experts, that this 5% that varied from the polls to the Republican vote count tally was somehow gotten illegitimately?
Yes. Okay.
I agree, and I'll defer to, but here's the problem. It all goes in one direction, and it has ever since the beginning of these computerized voting machines. It's not random. It's all going towards the Republicans. It's a red shift.
Exactly right. I've taken a purely mathematical approach. I use the numbers that were actually the unadjusted numbers. Now, if you look at 2004, which is probably the most notorious example, and it carries through to 2014, the pre-election polls had Kerry winning by a few percent. The exit polls, now, we didn't know this until 2010 when I came across the actual unadjusted national and state exit polls. Kerry won them. There were 13,660 responders in the national exit poll. Kerry won by 51.7%. However,
well, no, wait. Let me interrupt, Richard. You're saying that when you were researching the 2010 election, you came across the exit polls from 2004?
Yes. Don't forget, I've been involved with this since 2004. In 2010, it was only in 2010 that I happened to get into the Roper site, which at that time was accessible, and I downloaded manually, all state and national exit polls from 1988 to 2008. Now, it was then, in 2010, that I had said before, but now I had the actual raw numbers. Okay, we didn't have that. And I have it on a massive spreadsheet anybody could look at on the internet. Now, getting back to what I'm saying, Kerry, we had always been told by CNN and then the rest that there were 13,060 responders. Yes, but they told us that Bush won the national exit poll, but it just happened that it matched the recorded vote. That's a lie. They lied in your face. The actual unadjusted numbers, 13,660, show that Kerry had 51.7%. So
nationwide,
they basically took the same 13,660. They took Kerry responders, and they flipped them over to Bush. They took 6.7% of Kerry's national exit poll responders, and they flipped them over to Bush, and they published it, and that's when you get on CNN or any of the other media sites, you're going to see exactly that. You're going to see that Bush won the election, and the exit polls, as they always do, exactly match the recorded vote. So what we've got is an ongoing lie. A lie,
talking,
a provable lie.
Richard, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment. We're going to take a short two-minute break. What you have just said is that the exit polls, which you discovered 6 years after, showed that what Bob Fitrakis and I asserted in 2004, that John Kerry actually legitimately won the popular vote in 2004 and should have been inaugurated president. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, I said that in 2004. So did Jonathan Simon. But we said it on the basis of preliminary exit polling data. Jonathan didn't have the final the unadjusted numbers. So what I'm saying is there was a little bit of, there was a little question as to whether the polls were correct or why didn't we get the unadjusted numbers. It took until 2010 to get them on the Roper site where they were hidden from public view. Who would go and look for them? Who has the motivation?
Well, it's amazing they left them up. When we come back, we're just going to take a short two-minute break.
Yeah.
When we come back, I'm going to ask Bob Fitrakis to expand on that, and we're going to go deeper and deeper now. I want to talk also about the 2008 and 2012 elections. Let's explain why Barack Obama was allowed to win. We will come back to Bob Fitrakis and Richard Charnin in 2 minutes after Dana Lyons sings us the Rocky Top version of the Solartopia song.
Coal plants, nuke plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Sweet home to me, Solartopia, that's the future for me, green powered energy, windmills, hydrogen, photovoltaic cells with solar panels everywhere, solar cars, fast trains, bicycles, hydroplanes, get you home in under an hour.
Thank you, Dan Lyons. Thank you so much for the Solartopia song. We're back here with Bob Fitrakis and Richard Schoen. We have a request. Please watch your keys on your cell phones there. It sounds a little weird when we kick in. It sounds like actually an exit poll. So before the break, Bob Fitrakis, Richard Charnin, one of America's leading statistical experts on polling and elections, asserted that he found raw polling data in 2010 dating back to the 2004 election that indicated that John Kerry actually won the popular vote. Now, officially, John Kerry lost the popular vote by, what, 3 or so million votes. So we're not talking about a small gap here. How do you explain and what do you make of what Richard Charnin has just said about the alleged apparent theft of the 2004 presidential election?
Okay, let me reflect on this. The son of the CIA director, who rigged elections all over the world, even using mainframe computers, suddenly similar tactics appear in the United States. Why should anyone be surprised? We created black box voting. There's no way to verify it. It violates every principle of transparency. And you've got people that adjust these results after the fact. Again, I think it used to be called a covert operation in the Third World, a benign operation, because it wasn't a bloody coup. It was simply the rigging of the elections. And I think, come on, I'm in Ohio. They claimed the computers failed for the first time, the supercomputers in Ohio, and they shipped the vote down to a born-again preacher in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the basement of the old Pioneer Bank building to count the vote and send it back to Ohio. I mean, we found his computer scheme, the architectural designs for the computer system, and we found the memo. They planned it a year in advance. So Richard Charnin is an old friend of mine, but Richard Charnin just happened, you know, to get a hold of the real numbers. And, you know, he's talked about this numerous times. He's been on a radio show. I have as well, and I've written about it. He's to be given great credit for proving mathematically and without a doubt the theft of the election. Remember the error margin in these polls, these exit polls, because people have already voted, and they're telling the pollster how they voted was 1%. I mean, the numbers reported as the actual vote are absolutely impossible. And that's what Charnin has proved over and over again.
How is it that these numbers were left up on a website? Have they since disappeared, Richard Charnin? These numbers you found on the Roper site, are they still there?
Well, first of all, let me just, the numbers that I've got go back to 1988, which was also a stolen election. Well, very likely a stolen election. I have the state and national exit polls for each presidential election from 1988 to 2008. Now, I was able to get on the Roper site in 2010. I haven't been on it because when I tried to access it about 6 months ago or a year ago, I couldn't do it. You needed a special a membership or a password or whatever. So I didn't bother, okay, because I already had the numbers on my spreadsheet in the database. So the point I want to make is who would actually want or be motivated to go in to Roper? I've been doing this stuff since 2004. I knew what I was looking for. Okay, I had the time, I had the motivation, I had the background. Okay, I'm retired. Okay, so you need time. It took me a long time to manually enter all those numbers. Now, I want to make one thing very clear. It's very important. The state exit polls, unadjusted, only weighted by state population, voting population, are within 1/10 or 1/4% of the national exit polls. The Democrats won the unadjusted exit poll, state and national, by 52% to 42% since 1988, a 10% margin. On the recorded vote, their margin was 48% to 46%. So you have an 8% differential in margin. And that's based on 274 exit polls, state exit polls, and 6 national exit polls. I have all the numbers. They're irrefutable. The pattern is red shift is there. It's built in. It's not going away. And that's why I didn't bother to forecast for 2000, because it's a done deal. It's proven, but the world doesn't know about it. Buffett Rakes knows about it. Jonathan Simon knows about it. But, you know, I posted like crazy. But, you know, I wrote a book. But it's not a bestseller by any means. So the point I want to make is the data is there to convict the mainstream media national election pool for adjusting the numbers to match recorded vote counts. And it's one thing to adjust them by 1% or 2%. They took 8% margin and reduced it and forced the match. One final point. 2008, according to the recorded vote, Obama had 53%, and he won by 9.5 million votes. Now listen to this. He had 61% in the national unadjusted exit poll. He won by 22 to 23 million votes. It matches up with my Trouveau model. And as far as John Kerry is concerned, with his 17,000 lawyers, he won that election by 8 to 10 million votes, but Bush won the recorded vote by 3 million. You have a 13 million differential in margin, both in 2004 and in 2008. Obama won by such a major landslide that they couldn't steal it from him, okay? In 2004, Kerry only won by 8 or 10 million votes, so they were able to steal it. In 2000, Gore won by 4 or 5 million votes. And the 540,000 recorded. And we all know what happened in 2000. The point I'm trying to make, and I can go on and on and on, every election, even the elections the Democrats won, Clinton's victories were understated. He won by much more than you'll find if you go back and look at the official recorded vote. So what's my motivation for doing any additional work? I have none. But 2014, I'll just make this point. I got very close to Wisconsin people. I did a lot of work for them throughout the last 3 years. They said, could you look into the Wisconsin election? I said, you know, I feel like Al Pacino. You know, just when I think I'm out of it, they draw me back in. Okay. So I did, about a week or two ago. And sure enough, Walker stole that election, and again, the key is we don't have the unadjusted exit poll. We have the final adjusted poll, which has obvious anomalies in the number of returning voters from the 2012 recall. Now, I also did Florida. I just did those two states. Now, this is going to knock your socks off. Of course, Scott stole it in 2010. He lost the unadjusted exit polls by 5 or 6%. He won in 2010 with 50.59% of the vote. In 2014, he won the recorded vote by 50.58%, a 0.01% differential. In both key elections, governor elections, were stolen without any doubt. I'm sure others were, but I just looked at those two. Oh, and by the way, one other post I just recently did, as far as Nate Silver is concerned, I've exposed him years ago, in multiple posts. The guy knows absolutely nothing about methodology. He refuses to even mention the word election fraud. And, of course, he worked for the New York Times. Now he's working for ESPN. And I think it's a damn shame that he's got such a broad following of people who are just constantly duped by his inane lack of understanding. Either he's totally stupid and ignorant, or he's on the take. He won't give up that high salary. So, but that's not unique to him. Of course, we see it all over the mainstream media. There, I'm done with my rant. And as you can tell, I get a little emotional about this because I've been seeing this going on since 2000, and yet nothing has happened. All the great work Buffett Rakes has done, we can't get any traction. I don't know what the solution is, but it's not going to end. It's just getting worse. The system, as Jonathan Simon says, it's built in, okay? It's I call it a recursive relationship, which builds on the prior. You have prior theft, which is transposed to the current election. So it's an unending, infinite loop of stolen elections.
And you would put 2014 into that category. What do you think the realistic vote count would have done?
I just told you, I looked at two governor elections, and I know for a fact the exit polls are consistently adjusted. And there's why would it change in 2014? The pre-election polls, by the way, the early pre-election polls are of registered voters, and they're close to the actual true vote. But what happens as you get close to election day, all these registered voter polls, they take out the subset and they only look at likely voters. So what they're doing is they're basically discriminating new Democrats. And so what they have is you get it both ways. They got you coming and going. They got you with the late exit polls, the late pre-election polls, and the exit polls, and it appears that they always say, well, you know, it just happens that the poll matched within 0.01%. In fact, if you use a little common sense, that tells you no polls are going to match within 0.01%. So they're basically hanging themselves out. They're saying, yeah, we stole it, and we you've got all the evidence, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Bob Patrakis, what do you want to say about that?
No, I think he's right. It's like RICO, continual racketeering. They take the bad numbers, they assume that all the numbers are accurate, and then if the exit polls are unadjusted, in order to adjust them, they'll tell you that there were reluctant responders. They'll ignore the literature on reluctant responders, and they'll make stuff up. They'll claim people in predominant areas, like Republican areas, suddenly won't tell a pollster what's going on, or they'll walk past them. When these are randomized people, and they just go on to the next person that meets the randomized number. So their explanations make no sense. Or they'll tell you stuff like, oh, Bush got 80% of the undecided vote. There is mountains of academic study that say if people haven't decided just prior to the election, the normal tendency is for the challenger to get the majority of those votes. So
right.
They just turn around and go, in this special case, Bush overwhelmingly got an impossible number of undecided votes. Right? They won't tell you it broke even. They won't tell you got a slight amount. They have to make up exaggerated numbers that when you compare them to any other study of undecided last-minute voters, it makes no sense.
Go ahead.
I just want to make this point. Bob is absolutely right. But it's even more demonic. If you look at the national exit poll, you see all sorts of questions that are asked. How did you vote in the last election? Are you a Democrat, Republican? What's your party ID? Okay. How much income? There are certain categories like party ID, which they have to basically go in, and they have to adjust all of those cross tabs, every one of them. Has to be adjusted. So instead of having the Democrats, which, let's say, outnumber Republicans by 38 to 35 party ID, they'll say the Republicans are 35 and the Democrats are 31, like they did in Florida, which is unheard of. There are many more Democrats registered in Florida than Republicans. Yet they want us to believe, looking at the exit poll, that 35% were Republican, 31% Democrats. Well, maybe that's Wisconsin. In any case, they have to jiggle all the numbers in all the cross tabs. Okay? It's not just one number. National exit poll, we don't have that. We have that as well. But when you really zero in on the categories, you see you come up with ridiculous assumptions that are made as to the returning voters. Now, the returning, there are two ways they fix the exit polls. One is they cut down the Democratic turnout, which is apparent in the column on the left, which I call the weightings. And then they cut down the Democratic vote shares. But primarily, it's done by cutting down the number of returning voters. And of course, in male and female, in the gender demographic, they pretty much, that doesn't really make much of a difference, but they'll cut down the number of females voting for Democrats, and they'll cut down the number of males voting for Democrats.
Okay. So why has the Democratic Party, Bob or Richard, Bob, why don't you take this one? Why has the Democratic Party said nothing about this?
Well, because they don't want to call into question the legitimacy. That's the gentleman's agreement. You've got to pretend America is the most democratic country in the world, even though we have some of the most non-competitive legislative elections on earth. There's a gentleman's agreement that you can't undermine the legitimacy of the U.S. government. And not only do they do this abstractly, and sometimes they get numbers for their sample of Republicans, that if you add them all up, males and females actually go over 100%. Impossible numbers. They do it at the precinct level. You know, in order to adjust and get these votes that didn't occur, either than in cyberspace, they'll say, well, there was this huge surge of women in the late afternoon in Belmont and Warren and Claremont County. And then you go there and you talk to the poll workers and they say, no, we weren't even busy in the afternoon. And then you pull from their files the list of when people voted, which are posted at 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock, and the sign-in list, and none of the poll numbers match the actual signatures and the numbers that people that signed into the polls. Their own physical numbers at the precinct levels do not match their adjusted polls.
Well, Richard Charnin, we have 4 minutes left. Why has this worked to totally shift the government, control the government to the Republicans? How did they let Obama slip in if they've had the control of the electoral machinery?
Well, okay. First of all, it's two sides of the same coin. You've got to have the Democrats win, and then you have to have the Republicans win. The next time, it's the Republicans turn, okay? So they put Obama in because, well, they can say, well, look, he's the first black man, and that shows that we're in a real democracy. A black man can get elected, okay? So they put Obama in. Of course, he's a puppet. He's just a puppet. Everybody knows that. Now, the whole point,
well,
and Bob Fitraker said
Richard,
it precisely.
Who is doing this controlling?
Well, the top 0.1%, the people who run this, the people in the background, the real owners of the country, as George Carlin would say. Okay?
Right.
In other words, we're beyond Democrat and Republican. They report to the same corporate masters. Okay? It's as simple as that. It took me a long time to realize it. I used to think there was a Democratic Party and a Republican Party and independents. Well, there are independents, but Democrat, Republican, Jesse Ventura calls them Republicans, okay, or Republicats or whatever. On the congressional and executive level, they are just tools to give us the illusion that we have a democracy. And it's all wedge issues. Nothing really ever happens. And so it's to maintain the myth of a viable democracy, a two-party system. Key point, Democrats would win every election if it was fairly counted, if people were allowed to vote. Minorities are become a much greater percentage of the total population. The Democrats would never lose another election if it was conducted fairly. Never.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Richard Charnin, how do people get you? What's your website and your book?
Okay, richardcharnin.com. My book, I'm going to tell you two books.
Real quick.
Matrix of Deceit, that's election fraud. And my latest book, which came out a month ago, Reclaiming Science, the JFK Conspiracy. It's amazing, but it's taken off. It's among the top JFK books on Amazon.
And Rich, and Bob Fitrakis, your last word here real quick.
Well, people got to look at the facts, and they've got to realize that private companies are counting our votes. It's non-transparent. It's not democracy.
And Bob and I are about to conspire on yet another book, hopefully the last, on how the elections have been stolen in this country really since World War II. Bob Fitrakis and Richard Charnin, you've been great guests. It's terrifying stuff, the theft of our elections and our electoral process and the interplay of that with the actual polling and certainly the stealing of the Florida State House and the U.S. Congress, the Senate in this last election. And, of course, the presidency is next. This has been another scintillating hour of the Soratopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thanks again, Bob and Richard. We'll have you back.
You're welcome.
And we will continue to watch the
Thank
demise,
you.
Unfortunately.
Thanks,
and then the recomposting of the American electoral system. Richard, you have a great one. And thank you, crew in New York, for another excellent show.
Have
the
a great
Soratopia
Thanksgiving.
Green Power and Wellness Show. We'll be back again next week. In the meantime, have a great Thanksgiving, and we will see you in Solartopia.
Poor got so, the fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.